Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
An insider's look at the National Football League. It's NFL Lunch.
Presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse.
With Vinny and Haney on 105.7 The Fan.
Jackson to the end zone, wide open. Did he get the feed in? Yes, touchdown. Devontae Walker, his first NFL catch is a touchdown.
Right out of the bye, Ravens took on the Giants, CBS on the call, and they blow them out. Yeah, they committed 12 penalties that game, which is another discussion maybe for another time, but that was Devontae Walker, rookie receiver out of the University of North Carolina. It's 88-81-0-5-7 The Fan. It's NFL Lunch. Earlier in the show, just tuning in, scouted Nate Wiggins, Roger Rosengarten, Adisa Isaac gave grades. Thumbs up for Wiggins and Rosengarten, as you would expect. Isaac gets an incomplete. But where are we going with Tez Walker here after a season in which his playing time was scarce and his injuries might not have been plentiful, but he didn't really see the field a lot?
I would say another incomplete, Bob, basically another redshirt year. Now, the thing with Tez is Tez can run. Tez needs to get better route running because the thing that he can do, he's more of a straight line guy right now. So he's got to learn how to sink his hips better and get in and out of breaks better. And even on the touchdown that he did catch, it was a nice toe tap. He's got good hands. He's got awareness. He can find a football. But he needs to learn how to run routes much better. He's young. I mean, kid hadn't played a lot of football. Remember at North Carolina, he was suspended and played like seven games. And then came to the NFL, fourth round draft pick. And I know Mac Brown told him he should have stayed in school. He probably could have been like a much better draft pick at that time. But you know what? He came out and he's got some talent. He's raw. I remember watching him at the OTAs in the mini camp. He kind of stood out a little bit because every time you looked down on the other field, because there was, you know, like the backups and then we're on a different field. And he was always making some plays. He was showing up. I mean, you're like, damn, who was that? Oh, it was Tez Walker again. And then once the season started, you know, whether it be injury or whatever, he was not ready to line up on the outside and play down after down because he's not a good enough route runner yet. He cannot put his foot in the ground. He can't get his pads over his toes. He raises up too high, which all of a sudden you start raising up as a receiver. That DB's planting his foot and coming because you're telling him you're stopping. So he's got all those little things, technique things that he needs to develop and get better at running routes. Once he does that, if he can, then he'll be a good receiver for them. But right now, he's just a down-the-field guy. Now, he needs to work all offseason, and then the weight room's going to help him too. But all offseason, pads over toes, sinking your hips, you know, throwing that arm back, coming back to the ball, all those little things. And there are things that you can work on, and you say, oh, man, it's hard because you run so many routes. No, because you can work the stuff that he needs work on. I used to work with the receivers all the time. Tail end of the route, which is the last three steps of the route. And then, you know, you're not wearing yourself out running 15 yards all the time sprinting. No, you run the last three steps of the route, get your pads over your toes, get your feet down, bend your knees, plant, and come out. And that's, he needs to do thousands of those, just working on getting in and out of his route breaks. And then that's the biggest thing that he needs, and I can't wait to see it OTAs and minicamp, you know, the improvement. Because all these kids make tremendous strides from year one to year two. Why? Because, I mean, they come into camp and they've been through the combine. They've been through all that training and stuff for the combine, you know, and then they go straight to OTAs. I mean, you never have a break. Now they kind of get a chance to understand what it's all about, what the offseason's all about. So those kind of guys make a ton of improvements. And that the biggest improvement he needs is in and out of cuts.
Now, you have Zay Flowers, Rashad Bateman. You're set. But Aguilar, free agent. Tylan Wallace, free agent. Is he ready to ascend to that third guy? Or is Eric DaCosta and the powers that be in Baltimore going to have to address another wide receiver? Maybe he, you know, slow play him just a little bit more, because Bateman had a big year. Flowers made the Pro Bowl. But after that, there's a pretty significant drop-off given the uncertainty at that position.
Yeah, I would say this, Bob. I would say that get a veteran, unless you're planning on using a higher pick again to go get a receiver, which would be your third, then is there another Aguilar-type guy, maybe a younger Aguilar out there to go get my third? Because right now with Tez, can he do it? I hope he can. Am I positive he can? I'm not positive. So is he ready to be my third? If he improves and stuff, you know, the sad thing is before I know all those things about Tez Walker, I'll have had free agency in a draft. So I got to make that decision beforehand, because am I handing him a huge role at the number three receiver, and I'm going to count on him as the number three receiver? Am I asking too much right away? And maybe because of his lack of experience and stuff and playing experience, he may be better off in year two being like my four or five. And then if he develops into a three, awesome. Awesome. But I don't know that I can count on him today to be number three.
It's Vinny at Haney, 105.7 The Fan, NFL Lunch, breaking down the Ravens rookie class of 24. And so we had, what, two thumbs up, Isaac incomplete, Tez Walker incomplete, and I guess with the other fourth-round pick, TJ Tampa, more of the same there as well.
Another incomplete. But the thing that he did, like, I loved him on film at Iowa State and at the OTAs in the minicamp. I thought he showed a lot. The biggest thing that shows up with him, lack of deep speed, catch-up speed. And that's why I thought safety, possibly. Because he's long, he'll tackle, he's physical, he's got ball skills, and he's got range. So he's got all the things that you like for, like, that inside guy, you know, like Marlon plays, or safety. So he's going to play somewhere. He's a really good football player, but he didn't get to play a lot because apparently he had a lot of soft tissue injuries throughout the year, so he never really got a chance to play. And you don't, if you're not playing, you don't really have a chance to develop, because just practicing and doing those things, it's not, you're not going to improve a ton, because you need game reps. And he hasn't had a ton of game reps, but he's got talent, he's got ability. I like him playing somewhere, whether it be safety or on the inside. You know, kind of like the Eagles did with Cooper DeJean.
He don't run like DeJean, though.
DeJean was not a burner either.
But I'm not saying neither one's Darryl Green.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But with Tampa, he fell, air quotes, to the Ravens in the fourth round. Is that an appropriate way to say it, that they still, given, you know, incomplete rookie year, got a steal there? Looking at the bigger picture here.
From what I saw on film, I was shocked he went that late. And so was Mel Kiper. I mean, Mel thought he was going to go much. I'm sure Eric didn't think he was going to be sitting there at four. They got a really talented guy. And somebody high up in their organization, you know, they love him over there.
Well, here's another incomplete. Rasheen Ali,
yeah.
Running back out of Marshall. And, you know, Ravens, if they're set at one position, it's running back. You know what I mean? So is there any room at the end for this guy? And, you know, fifth-round pick. And, you know, you got Hill. You've got Keaton Mitchell, another year removed from an injury.
Yeah.
As we saw him get that burst back. And then Derrick Henry.
Yeah, the thing is, Bob, is, all right, for him, if everybody's healthy, because he's not as good as Mitchell, Hill, or Henry, of course. So Are you going to keep five running backs? You know, because I'm including the fullback, too. Are you going to keep five? And, you know, probably are. And what did we hear John Cooper say? Deepest position deep class, is the running back. You know, so you can find them. I know they like Ali. He ran kicks back. Did all right job. I don't see a ton of burst. You know, and then when he got a chance to get some plays, he was okay. I don't know that I see any elite qualities in him. Can he be a starter for them? I don't see that. I just see a backup kind of guy that's got to play special teams. And, Bob, if you're sitting there and there's a guy that you love in a draft, or maybe there is an undrafted free agent, if it's so deep, that may compete with him to make the team.
When we come back, we'll talk about Leary, Samick, and Kane, who's got the biggest upside of the three that we haven't spoken about. Draft picks of 2024. Ravens have the 27th pick in the 25 draft. Danielle Allentuck, will talk Orioles with her at 1:30 from the Baltimore Banner. Dylan Carlson, one-year deal. Former Oriole Austin Hayes has a new home. We'll tell you what that is when we come back. Here on the show, Baltimore Banner about the Orioles moves. Dylan Carlson signed by free agent late of Tampa, 1 year deal, relatively cheap. And then Adam Jones is back. Austin Hayes, by the way, 1 year, $5 million with the Reds. So all hazy signing with the Cincinnati Reds as his career takes him to a first time, I guess. Yeah, National League. No, he's with the Phillies. That's right. And that trade at the trade deadline. All right. So let's see. Wiggins, yes. Rosengarten, yes. Isaac Walker, Tampa, Ali, incomplete. Devin Leary.
No.
Okay.
I just think he's short. You know, he had a nice arm. He can't play in the NFL, Bob. I mean, they need a backup quarterback. Josh Johnson, I mean, you know, that was nice and all, but they need a legitimate backup quarterback with, you know, this year.
He might have been expelled for doing grades. Leary?
Oh, yeah.
He's not even in school.
he turned the ball over a ton in college.
And he's a little dude. There was a lot of fumble rooskies
and picks.
Not a lot I liked about watching him. And you watch him and they're probably like, did we really draft him? You know, I mean, it was a 6th-round pick. Now, compensatory 6. So that's, you know, basically it's a 7th-round pick.
So you have two of those 7th-rounders and Nick Samick. Out of Michigan State, interior lineman. What's any upside there?
Bob, I'm guessing there's some, you know, because he was inactive every week. And he made the roster for a 7th-round pick center. So they saw something in him. He's got to have great offseason, working out, lifting, all those things. And then he needs a great offseason, you know, playing, because he's probably going to line up at the number 2 center all the time. So he needs to show some development there. So, Bob, I don't remember seeing him in a game.
So I guess you have to have a little versatility. I mean, like Bozeman could play, you know, multiple
center guard.
Slots.
Yeah, you got to play a couple spots.
Can he maybe do that depending on the need and how they address the O-line in the offseason? Or is he going to be a guy that's going to be fighting for a roster spot?
Well, you know what's going to be interesting? Because, like, these linemen that were drafted, Bob, Joe D was there when they drafted them, you know, and now new O-line coach. So how does he like him? That's going to be the big question. So I'm saying there's some things that they like about Samick, and I don't know what they are. Are they going to draft another guard center? I'm guessing they're with 11 picks, they'll probably take at least 2 tackles and maybe another guard center type guy, and he'll compete. He's going to have to compete to win a job again.
And then Kane at number 7th-round pick as well. By the way, the Samick pick came from the Jets in the Chuck Clark trade, but Kane out of Purdue, we did see him on the field.
Played
mainly
a lot.
Special teamer guy. I mean, Geno Stone was a 7th-round pick. I mean, can they, strike twice with that sort of luck, if you want to call it that? And Geno Stone obviously made a lot of his own luck, of course.
Yeah, but Kane, Bob, I tell you what, he was one of their better special teamers at the end of the year. I mean, he was covering kicks. He always showed up. He was always making some plays. I liked him. And I'm guessing that Chris Horton will be like, that's one of my guys. Because the 50, 51, 52, 53, those are Chris Horton's picks. Like, my core special teams guys. And Kane's going to be one of those guys. Bo Braid may be one of those guys, Bob. The only problem with Bo Braid is, you know, he's closer to the line of scrimmage. He's not as good as, you know, in deep coverage and stuff. And Kane played in all the playoff games, too. I mean, he was active every game where Bo Braid wasn't for the playoffs. So Kane's going to be around. You know, does he have a chance to play in the secondary? I think that'll be determined. We got to see him play it because we haven't seen him play a lot back there, Bob. But he's a really good teamer.
All right. Let's get real quick to the 23 draft. As the Ravens will have 11 picks this year, they only had six in 23 and second year unplanned, but we'll improvise and adapt. Look, Zay Flowers made the Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
So thumbs up there for sure.
Oh, big time. That was, I mean, Bob, look at how many teams passed on Zay, you know, and took other receivers. So, although, I mean, it was crazy because I do talk to Mel Kiper a lot, and both Mel and I had Zay Flowers as number one receiver, you know. And how about the Chargers, Bob? I mean, they took the Texas.
Quentin Johnson.
They had to pick before the Ravens took Zay Flowers.
Yeah, and he flashed. He was terrible his rookie season, but he flashed a little bit year two. Third, because Ravens didn't have a second rounder last year, Trenton Simpson. Ooh, ouch.
Yeah.
Expectations high this season.
Started out okay. Finished terribly. And maybe that's why the linebacker coach is fired too, Bob. You know, I don't know, because he regressed. And the linebacker coach, because the year before, Zach Orr was the linebacker coach.
Yeah, De Leon.
Yeah.
The linebacker coach we're talking about.
Yeah, do you...
Blame it on him?
No, because the thing with Simpson was, I mean, Bob, there's a couple things. When Simpson started playing less, Roquan played great.
Yeah.
You know, and Roquan was struggling at the... I just think that Roquan had to play two positions, basically, like helping him over way too much probably than he needed to. You know, more... He was asking so much of Roquan that Roquan couldn't play his position good enough. And when Simpson... When they brought in Board and Harrison, he didn't have to worry about them, and he could just go play his game. So I think that Simpson doesn't play physical enough. Catches, plays too high. Doesn't take on blocks well. And they played... I mean, Bob, he wasn't playing a snap.
Ooh. No.
Yeah.
So as he took a step backwards, given a starting position out of the gate, Tavis Robinson probably exceeded expectations. Oh. And I'm going to go ahead and take a victory lap because I said, watch out for this guy. I didn't say it was going to be Lawrence Taylor or Terrell Suggs by any stretch, but I think you got more out of him than you did Trenton Simpson in 2024.
No doubt. And Bob, he got better as season one.
And he is 28 years older.
Yeah, he is older. Yeah, he is older.
But he was making plays and making plays in the postseason, too.
He is a run defender and an excellent run defender. And which game was it? Who were they playing that was going to run the ball a ton? Because Owe played like 15 snaps and he played like 45. You know, I mean, if they were playing teams that were going to run the football, 95 was in there because he does it extremely well and he plays hard and he chases and he's physical. So I like for his role, Bob, if I'm just lining him up and say, you're an elite pass rusher, that ain't happening.
But he's an asset to your defense properly.
Yes, no doubt. Because if I'm playing a team that, you know, if I'm playing, I think it was Philly. Philly played almost the whole game.
Caillou Blue Kelly, no longer in the organization. Sala on the practice squad. This was a guy that a year ago was going to be the starting left guard or was running with the ones and didn't even make the team out of training camp.
Yeah, I think mental got him.
And then Voorhees was a starter. Then he got hurt, but still, I would think they got plans for him.
Yeah, I thought when Voorhees had to play that game, You know, when McCary was out, was it Pittsburgh? I think it might have been Pittsburgh. The Week 17 game or whatever where McCary didn't play. I thought he did all right. I think if he would have been in there the whole time, I think he'd have made improvements as the season went along. Because he's more physically ready to play. So if I'm a betting man, Bob, he's going to be marked in as the starting left guard.
And Rosen, actually, Cleveland was the last game of the season. We're thinking about last year.
Yeah, Cleveland, yeah. So I think Voorhees will be the left guard. Rosengarten will be the left tackle. And then they'll be looking for a right tackle.
288-81057, the pay will come back. Danielle Allentuck from the Baltimore Banner talk about Dylan Carlson, what he brings to the equation for the Orioles. Signed yesterday, 1 year deal, less than $1 million. Can get over a mil if he reaches some incentives. Adam Jones joining the Orioles front office as an assistant to Mike Elias. And Austin Hayes has moved on. Any talk that the Orioles might be interested in bringing him back, which is now a moot point, 5 year or 1 year, $5 million. Orioles have had a busy offseason, may not have been splashing it up with the high-priced acquisitions, but here to talk about that and more, Bob Adiviti Serrato. Let's welcome in on the Window Nation guest hotline from the Baltimore Banner, Danielle Allentuck. Danielle, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Of course. Good afternoon.
All right. We don't want to make this all about ex-Orioles, but we just saw the news that Austin Hayes, 1 year, $5 million with the Reds. Was there any talk within the warehouse about bringing old Hazy back on a feel-good, team-friendly sort of deal there?
You know, not that I know of. I think when they traded him, everybody kind of acknowledged that it was the end of his time here. He served his purpose for a long time here. He helped him get out of the rebuild. But last year when he was traded, it very much felt like that would be his final days in an Orioles uniform.
All right, now Dylan Carlson is in, one of the replacements out there in the outfield for Brandon Hyde and Mike Elias. We know the track record, a finalist for Rookie of the Year 4 years ago. He's had a ton of injuries since then. Cheap deal based on our comparisons here. For instance, if somebody hands me that money, I'll probably call out sick for a week, Danielle, if you know what I'm saying. Almost $1 million in cash, but he's coming in. Splits good against lefties, bad against righties. So what can you tell us about Dylan Carlson and where he projects to fit in given the competition there in the outfield?
Yeah, it's a very low-risk deal. And yeah, I mean, it seems like a lot of money to us, but that's basically league minimum. So they're not paying him any more than they will pay, say, a Heston Kerkstedt or another guy early in his career. So it's pretty low-risk deal. I don't hate it. You know, kind of see what happens there. You know, his career has been mostly down since that good Rookie of the Year candidacy in 2021, but he has the stuff. He is, you know, very much a platoon candidate. And the thing that may give him an edge over a guy like Heston Kerkstedt is the fact that he can truly play every outfield position. So I think he will enter spring training in competition for the fourth outfield spot. I don't think he's necessarily ahead of Heston Kerkstedt at this point. But I think, you know, if he goes out and has a good spring and Heston doesn't look great, he could find his way to this opening day roster. And the other side of this is he still has options. So I think that he is a good pickup because maybe he doesn't have a good spring training. You send him to AAA. Somebody inevitably is going to get hurt. He's a good bench guy you can bring up, who can fill in anywhere in the outfield whenever you need him to.
And now, Danielle, you mentioned Heston. And look, he was drafted in 2020. We know the injuries, the myocarditis, the hammy. Getting a little up there, at least in regards to young prospect baseball guys. Is this a do-or-die season for him? I mean, we're talking about him possibly, you know, competing with Dylan Carlson for a spot. Santander's in Toronto. Why wouldn't Kerkstedt be given every opportunity to earn significant playing time this season?
Yeah, and I think he will, as long as he looks good and stays healthy. He's had a pretty unfortunate career. I mean, last year, I think he probably would have earned his way into potentially a starting outfield spot if it hadn't been for the concussion. I think that concussion impacted him a lot more than we know, and impacted his balance a lot more than we know. So I don't think he's really even been given a fair shot at this point to show what he can do. And his upside is so much bigger than Dylan Carlson's at this point. And I think that he very well is going to be given that chance as a fourth outfielder to go out and show what he can do and hopefully a full major league season.
Danielle Allen Tuck from the Baltimore Banner joining us here. Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan, talking to Orioles, Bob Haney, Vinny Serrato. All right, Adam Jones is back. He's in the nest. He's in the front office. One of the great players in the history of the franchise now gets to wear a suit and be the executive guy. Exactly what is his role going to be? We know the title, but what will that entail, and how closely will he work with Mike Elias and help put together, you know, hopefully a championship team here soon?
Yeah, I mean, look, knowing Adam Jones, he's not going to be wearing a suit. Knowing his personality. But I think he's going to have a couple of different responsibilities with the Orioles, and I think that he can kind of make it what he wants. That's the perk of being a special advisor, is he doesn't have, you know, set job duties. You know, we talked to him this morning. He really wants to be a mentor to the players and help them as they go through, you know, different career milestones and different career downfalls, and kind of use his experience to help players get through that. Mike Elias also talked about using Adam Jones to kind of help with some of their Japanese players, because he did spend some time over there, and he does know the league really well. And, you know, he's obviously not Japanese, but he understands the culture and can maybe help, you know, some of these, their recruiting over there, which is something that the Orioles really want to improve on. But I think most of all is that mentorship. It's kind of being that guy who's been there, done that, and can help out some of these younger guys kind of figure their way through the major leagues.
Hey, Danielle. You know, the Adam Jones situation, and because we have new ownership and Cal Ripken is, you know, on the ownership group, do you think it was them that kind of pushed, let's start to get some of our former players involved?
I do. And I think that it's, you know, a sign of a good, healthy organization if they want to have former players involved in their current team, because it shows that they respect their history and they respect the guys who helped them get to the point where they are now. So I definitely think that Cal Ripken probably played a role in that. I think David Rubenstein had to be open to it, had to be open to them wanting to bring back players. And Mike Elias said this morning that he wants to bring back other players as well, that he's hoping that this is just kind of the start. They plan at spring training to have a ton of guest instructors who are former players to come in and kind of be a part of the team again and, you know, connect the current team to its history.
Danielle, last thing for you. Getting back to this year's team on the field, and we talked about Carlson. He was a finalist for Rookie of the Year back in 2021. Well, the others were Jonathan India, who won it with the Reds, and Trevor Rogers, now with the Orioles, as they acquired him, as you know, from Miami last year. What is his – I'll be honest with you, a lot of us have forgotten that he's still very much a part of the mix, and he's still relatively young, and he pitched better in Norfolk after he was sent back late in the season. Where does he fit in? When we get to Sarasota, how closely are you watching Rogers? And could he possibly stun us all and come north with the team?
Yeah, I'm very curious to see what he's going to look like in spring training, because I don't think we got a great look at him. He only made a couple of starts up in the majors, and you know, I've heard about the adjustments and the progress he made down in Norfolk, but it's kind of hard to judge, you know, first of all, when you're playing against AAA hitters, and second of all, when you can't see with your own eyes. So I'm very curious to see what he looks like this spring, and I think that, you know, he could be in competition for that fifth rotation spot. Potentially they see him as a bullpen arm, as kind of a long reliever. But I think there's a lot up in the air about, you know, how many guys do they want in the rotation? Do they want to go with that six-man rotation to start the season? Do they want to put Albert Flores in the bullpen and kind of fill that long reliever, jack-of-all-trades type of role that Albert Flores is capable of? So I think that there's a lot of things up in the air, and kind of depending how Trevor looks, how the Orioles want to structure the pitching staff will depend on where Trevor Rogers is going to fit in this year.
Danielle Allen Tuck, Baltimore Banner, talking Orioles. Danielle, appreciate the time as always. We'll catch up with you hopefully before you head to Sarasota in a couple of weeks. If not, enjoy the rest of your Turn It Up Tuesday. Crank it up to 12 for us.
Thank you.
Danielle Allen Tuck, everybody. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. We'll come back, take a trip through the funhouse. Nolan McGraw, who always has it turned up loud. And then Inside Access takes over at 2 o'clock. Right.
Quick draws. No funhouse.
What's going through your mind right now?
The rudeness, tuneness text reader.
Who's the fastest gun alive?
This side of the Chesapeake.
Sponsored by the Smile Design Center. Changing the way you feel about dentistry one smile at a time. For information or to schedule an appointment for care, visit them today at smiledesigndoctor.com.
I like that quick draw.
105.7 The Fan.
Get things started here with Howard in Baltimore, who says, no doubt, Todd Monken and John Harbaugh should be paid. Harbaugh did a fantastic job turning the team around from that 0-2 start. First time in forever they got off to that bad of a start, still win the division. I'm quite sure he was in on bringing Dean Pease back, his idea, also a brilliant decision.
Yes, it was either Harbs or Bisciotti, or a combination of both. That would be my guess who said, that, hey, we got to get this ship right.
Another texter here says, I need to agree that the officiating as a whole has just been terrible across the league. Can't pinpoint one particular game. It's just been bad across the board. It gets scrutinized more so when your team is the one getting screwed over or the team you hate gets favored. Everyone in the league screaming the same thing. That text from Chris.
Now, for the spot of the football.
Yes.
Like tennis, they've got the technology where the ball hits the line.
Yeah.
It's in or out. And I'm assuming baseball will get to the black and the corners of the plate, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not smart enough to figure out how you could tell. I mean, is there going to be, does the football hit a sensor? You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't know how you can make that 100% idiot proof.
Right.
Spotting the ball properly here.
Well, the biggest issue, you know, kind of like with, right now with baseball is every ump's got his own strike zone. And like the referee, we talk about it every Monday, who the crew's going to be because what they call this type of penalty. They
don't
call
interpretation.
You know, yeah. I mean, so nothing is uniformed.
And even basketball had to put that little half circle in the paint where charge or block was kind of spoke for itself. So got to get her done somehow, because if I'm a Bills fan today, I'm still running hot over that spot and the ball hit the ground and
yeah,
I don't know. Whatever.
Some people have suggested putting some sort of chip, some sort of device in the ball that, you know, you would tell you when it passes the line to gain. But we actually have a texter here that says problem there. Because there's always a problem, no matter what idea you come up with. Say there's a scrum on, you know, a tush-push style play, a quarterback sneak. He's buried at the bottom of the pile. Well, you've been down for 30 seconds, but you can keep wiggling that ball forward. The sensor, it would trip the sensor seemingly, but that doesn't tell you when the player was actually down. So there's still a gray area. No
and
matter
if they blow the
do.
Whistle, the play's dead anyway, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I mean, they got to figure out the scrum piles anyway. Because I think it was the Eagles-Commanders game where there was a turnover, and a Commanders player came out of the pile with the ball, and they said,
"Up, down,
Eagles ball."
It was opening kickoff,
right?
Because he was down. He was he was down.
But for the most part, you can't see what's going on down inside that pile, you know.
By the way, speaking of the Commanders, when Cordell was running hot yesterday, anybody talk about was it Lua or Tua?
Oh, jumping over
he looked like a fan ran onto the field trying to tackle Jalen Hurts. He was like, is he even on the team? They were about to give him a touchdown. They were getting so
I thought he was going to do it a third time.
Hey,
he should have.
You got to figure it out. I mean, they run. You know what they're running. You got to figure out a way to stop it.
And lastly, here from Mike. I made a point earlier in the show that you should criticize all quarterbacks equally for not being able to get past the Chiefs. Mike here makes a fair point, says when it comes to the playoffs, you can pick and choose who to bash. Yes, both Lamar and Allen have lost to the Chiefs, but in every game Allen's played, he's played well, given them a chance to win. Can't say the same about Lamar's playoff track record.
Probably fair to say, I would guess.
Yeah, I think Allen's career playoff rating's over 100, and he's 2-0 against Lamar. Not that that's a fair indicator, but then again, he's 0-4 against Mahomes, and people like to throw that up in your face. But hey, Brady's 2-0 against Mahomes in the playoffs, so he's retired. He will always have scoreboard.
What was
in that regard?
Peyton Manning to Brady. That was kind of ugly too, wasn't it?
Oh, he was taking that spanking
for
the most part. He got him once or twice, if I'm not mistaken. But when Peyton was really in his prime, and those Colts teams were like 14-2, 15-1, they were losing to New England. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. We're done for the day. We'll be back tomorrow with Woman Crush Wednesday, talking about whatever happens in your sporting world over the next few hours. You want to join us, you know how to do so. Inside Access is coming up next. For Nolan McGraw, Vinny Serrato, I'm Bob Haney. Stay safe, stay healthy. Talk to you in the morning. For now, class dismissed.